indie rock, indie pop, 80s alternative, country and western, bluegrass, gospel. On which jazz, radio station do you reggae, expect to find all of the above?
Metal.
Your local rock station?
Hip-hop.
I don't think so. The country and western station? I don't think so. The dance music station? I don't think so. The only place on the airwaves where you'll find programming as diverse as this is right here on CFRC 101.9 FM. Check out the schedule at CFRC.ca for a full list of everything CFRC has to offer. Rural life, food, literature and poetry, science and technology, comedy, queer news, law, women's issues, social justice, and oh so much more.
CFRC is stoked to partner with KPP Concerts on an awesome summer lineup. On June 27th, be sure to catch Long Range Hustle and Psycho Billy Legends Reverend Horton Heat on June 28th. On July 3rd, check out alt country legend Fred Eaglesmith, followed by folk punk legend Billy Bragg on July 5th. Emo is alive and well on July 8th with Arms Length and Mo Kenny come to town on July 9th. Hip-hop pioneer Souls of Mischief are here on July 21st, and we'll get some hardcore action with Spaced on July 23rd. Almond Monica brings Arabic Jazz to Kingston on August 7th, and finally, August 9th, you can see Lucero Ben Nichols. For tickets and full information on these and other awesome shows, visit kppconcerts.com.
Hi, I'm Tom Savage, professional musician and songwriter and host of Leave It All on the Stage. This CFRC radio show and podcast series explores the challenges of the working musician in the 21st century, while also identifying the many joys inherent in the artist's life. Episodes feature special guests discussing a range of topics, and whether you're new to the music scene, a veteran performer, or a music fan, there's something here for you. Music equals life. Thanks for joining us. Being a professional musician can be quite the ride. The highs and the lows, the thrill of a sold-out concert, the deflation of an empty room, the excitement of releasing a new album, and the infuriation of hearing someone ask, "What are you doing next?" 6 weeks after that album comes out. The anticipation of booking a tour, the many boring hours on the road making that tour a reality, of course, mixed in with some truly rewarding experiences. It can be a roller coaster ride, and if you have a band, there are also many personalities to deal with. There's depression, there's substance abuse, there are spouses and families left behind, not just when you're a touring musician. Think about being busy every weekend, like forever.
Sorry. I'm trying not to react.
That's okay. It's a lot. And how do we musicians protect our mental health in this topsy-turvy vocation we find ourselves in? Joining me today to discuss this topic is Emily Fennell, also known as Miss Emily. She's a two-time Juno nominee, Maple Blues Award winner. And if you're from the Kingston or Prince Edward County areas especially, she needs no introduction because she's a bona fide celebrity.
Ooh.
In these parts.
Wow.
And she has been in this game almost as long as me, which is a very long, long time indeed.
Man.
So, welcome.
Thanks. That was so great. I wanted to interject pretty much every time you hit a breath.
Yeah. Well, we could talk about that roller coaster ride if you like.
It's great. You nailed it. Like you totally nailed it. Everything you said there was like, yep, yes, uh-huh. Shed a tear there. Okay. Yep. No, fantastic. Wow. That's it. Yeah, let's talk about that.
Yeah. And I've noticed I'm noticing that I'm like, I'll be 53 this year.
Impossible.
And I don't know why I'm just noticing this now, but we musicians are a different breed. You know, it's like, and kind of live in a bit of a different reality than, I guess, not just musicians, but artists, mm-hmm. in general, even self-employed people. How do we keep it all together?
First of all, I have to say I've found a way to describe the whole thing, which is we have a disease and it's incurable.
Okay.
So that I just sum it up there, and I use it a lot, like when I speak to groups and when I do interviews and when I'm mentoring with somebody in the industry who's perhaps younger, earlier in their career than I am. That's how I describe it. It's a disease. It's incurable. You can try and peace out from this existence, but it will haunt you in all the ways throughout your life. And I could give you 100 examples, but you know 100 examples, I'm sure, of people who are like, yeah, I'm not going to do this anymore. And they're either miserable.
I sometimes hear that every week from some people.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
The other thing was like during the indoor times, we had this word pivoting that everybody was using, and I was like, and they're like, how are the artists pivoting? I was like, listen, if you are a full-time artist, full-time musician, you have to change direction, pivot, if we will, every 6 months to a year. I mean, the business changes constantly.
Yeah.
And it's not just it's getting more evolved in the tech department. It's like the entire aspect of our business and where you can make money and where you lose money and what's expensive versus what's less expensive. It's always changing. You know, recording an album used to be the most expensive thing in the whole wide world. Now it can be
or not.
You can make it at home and it's the least expensive thing. And, you know, it used to be you had to have a label. Well, now having a label is almost like
Why?
To your own detriment.
Yeah.
So it's just constantly changing.
For sure.
So
I talked about the thrill of a sold out concert and the deflation of an empty room and that sort of bounce. And I know all your concerts are sold out.
Oh no, Tom. No, they're not, Tom.
But no, I'm just kidding. But like, I always say that I wish every night was a Friday night. Because if when you're on tour and you have like, well, yeah, Friday and Saturday, yeah, Sunday's all right. Yeah, now we got Monday. And we've got to, you know, we're in the middle of Saskatchewan.
Yep.
And what are we going to do?
Chilliwack, man. I got a guy in Chilliwack who can fill a room on a Monday. Seriously. I'm not kidding you. I just wrote him an email yesterday, but it really is. You're right. It's like, what do you do on the Monday?
Yeah.
Or the Tuesday. Like every day you're not making money, you're losing money. I had a call with my agent, and my agent is in the States, and he pretty much he doesn't exclusively book my US side stuff, but I got Canada so dialed in many ways now.
You don't need that.
I kind of don't. I mean, I sometimes throw some stuff at him because he's really great. And I love the booking process. You know, you do it for so long and you're like, everybody's your pal.
Yeah. You know? You're right. Like it's just easier when you have, well, it's like anything. It's about relationships. Mm-hmm. And if you got a connection, you got to use that connection. And
absolutely.
Or either to book a gig or to help somebody else out, which I've done quite a lot. You know, just if you hear, well, I'll get people contacting me and say, oh, I got this gig and this thing. And I was like, oh, try this guy, try that guy. Like,
it's great.
Just doing that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking about like mental health wise, the idea, the scope of this show.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I've tried to, I'm pretty chill, dude. Like I'm super chill. But so it's not hard for me to keep an even keel. But I do have musician friends who, they ride that high of that sold out show and they can crash hard when it turns because inevitably you're going to have a time where you're going to have to like just suck it up and deal with uncomfortable situation so what's your approach?
Well, I will say what you just described there, I haven't found a time in my career where that didn't exist. It's always existed, you know. You know, if I play Cumberland, Maryland, which I am booked to play there again in September, which is a beautiful venue. It's a gallery, with a beautiful, live music space and sound system. But like, I don't have a fan base there. So, you know, I had this great year nominated for Juno, the Blues Awards are still ahead this fall. Like, there's things happening, and I'm excited about it. But I'm already preparing for September mentally for when I drive a million hours and I go down, and everyone's really nice, but like, it's, you know,
I think, just like that feeling where people are all kind of like almost sorry for you.
Yeah,
like that vibe of when there's not that many people.
No,
in the room.
It wasn't bad. It was like 36.
That's not bad.
In Cumberland, Maryland, where I've stayed, I've never played. You know, it's not.
That's pretty good.
It's. I love your attitude. Listen, I did not make money. And that is kind of what we're here for in some capacity. You know, we have kids.
Oh, yeah. And it's a tough hit to travel all that way, for sure.
It is, yeah. And, you know, we root it and stuff. But no, it's there's moments in there. And the other thing is, like, for me, where am I staying after? So if I'm, it's funny, I can find joy in pretty much every show of any size. Mm-hmm. It's kind of the stuff around it. So I had to stay in a place that night, and they said to me, oh, where are you staying? I said, you know, the Comfort Inn or whatever. They're like, ooh. And I knew it. There was two places to stay in town. One was really expensive. One was really cheap. I went for the really cheap one. But then, of course, I'm running from my car in the parking lot to the front door of the hotel, where I feel marginally safer, but not that much safer. I'm on my own, and I'm like, damn it, Emily, at 44 I was at the time, the first time. I was like, at 44, have we not outgrown this? We haven't? Okay. when does one outgrow this?
Put the extra few bucks down for the fancy place.
Well, then I've officially lost money. And then what was the point of going in the first place? You know?
Well, it's because of the
disease.
110 people that you're going to get out when you play in September.
You know what? I like your attitude. I think the room might hold 80, but I'll be thrilled.
If, be a lineup.
Yeah, then. That's what I want.
Yeah.
And, you know, but that, yeah, the stuff around it, for me, it's not really this on the stage stuff very often. I really am good at avoiding those situations that make me sad.
Yeah.
The on the stage situations that make me sad.
Yeah.
But now it's the stuff around it. I still need to dial in.
Well, yeah, it's a lot of hours between, you know, like if you're just playing 2 hours.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
It's a lot of hours, a lot of driving, a lot of questionable hotels. And
oh, yeah. The safety thing is real, because what kind of price do you put on safety, right? I don't know. Do you find that that's a thing with you, the safety thing? Is it ever anything you worry about?
Not too much. But I think, you know, being a woman would be different for sure.
Yeah.
But, so I did at least a good decade of solo tours. Yeah, before, like when COVID came, I've only toured Ontario and Quebec since.
Yep.
But in those days, there's kind of this hyper vigilance of, like, you know, when you're looking around, because you're on your own. Mm-hmm. It's definitely different when you're on your own. And I now almost always I go out with the band, and then you're a team.
Oh yeah.
So the band dynamic's totally different. How, like, do you, what's the divide on, like, how much you go out with the band and how much you go out solo?
So, for sure, post-pandemic, very different than pre-pandemic. Pre-pandemic, I was pretty much exclusively full band, which is, to elaborate, minimum 6-piece, generally, in this part of the country. On the West Coast, I'm a 4 to 6-piece. And a tour manager, generally. I usually bring a tour manager with me for a number of reasons. And so, you know, that's 7-piece. That's a lot. But in my current situation, I would say at least half of my money these days is made from solo touring and a little bit of duo touring. We call it Miss Emily Unplugged.
Yeah.
Southside Shuffle, Chuck, who runs that, he was the one that came up with Miss Emily Unplugged, that idea, because he was like, well, we don't want to call it Miss Emily Duo. And I kind of liked that.
It makes more sense.
I mean, it just sounds better, but it's people then kind of know what to expect. They won't automatically assume it's the full band, because the full band is a big production.
That's a lot.
It is a lot. You know, the overhead is a lot.
Yeah. Like even with Dead Root Revival, we're a 4-piece, but, and we try to travel in my van, if we can, although sometimes we're pulling a trailer. And with the Iran war thing, it was like hard to take because, you know, yeah. you have this run of shows and it's like, oh, gas just doubled. Oh, we get to pull this trailer around Southern Ontario. So
yeah, I was in BC when that happened. I was on tour in BC when
it's probably more expensive out there.
Oh, it hit. It was like 208 a liter or whatever, driving through interior BC, Vancouver Island. I was like, wow, that's a... Did I have a budget for gas? No, but I guess it's doubled. Whatever I'm spending has essentially doubled.
Yeah, that's rough.
Yeah, man.
But so,
and then they laughed.
Yeah. And with the band, because we basically stay in Ontario and Quebec. Mm-hmm. Generally, the further out we go, we make less money.
Yeah.
Because you've got hotels and gas.
Absolutely.
And all that. So, and then we have our markets in the area. We play Kingston twice a year, basically, and those shows make money.
Mm-hmm.
So we just pool it together and pay ourselves. So we lose money, we make money, but we always get paid the same.
I love that.
So that helps because I think that helps, speaking of mental health, like morally, the morale of the band.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you show up for a gig and no one's there and it's like, oh. Because like, we used to do it this way because we'd be like, we can only pay out $100 a guy.
Yeah.
Because that show tanked. But now we get paid the same
consistently.
Amount.
Consistently.
Whether it's sold out show or two people.
Yeah.
And I find that really works.
That's great.
It's helpful.
I mean, for me, my guys get paid no matter what.
Right.
So I might lose money on a show or I might make bank on a show.
Yeah, so it's similar, really.
It is. Yeah. I mean, I carry the whole thing mm-hmm. on my shoulders in the sense that I don't burden anybody with the numbers generally. However, they can tell when I am crying in the car on the way home. But, you know, usually I'm joking, really, because it doesn't happen now. Well, I mean, the days of
tears of joy.
Yes. Yeah. Now it's tears of joy. Yeah. Now we have guarantees and we have money up front. I did have two festivals this summer. One bailed, just ghosted after they had booked me last year for this year. And then I had one fold and I had Save the Weekend. They were both fly in festivals.
Wow. Like,
yeah. So as you can imagine, and I was trying to route it and all, it's, you know, British Columbia for both of those and not back to back. They're in different months. So,
so were you just going to fly in for the festival or were you going to book around that?
Book around it.
Yeah.
We would, the other thing is I have a Vancouver Island band.
Yeah.
Because just getting people over to Vancouver Island, even if it's from the mainland, even so I might fly my band to Interior BC, which I did last year, Salmon Arm Roots and Blues Festival. But then, because it's actually just as expensive to get my guys off of Vancouver Island to Interior BC. But I do some touring. I love Vancouver Island and the little islands associated with it. So
yeah.
I do at least one to two tours out there a year.
Nice.
And I have guys out there.
That's good.
And they over the last few years they've just become brothers, you know, an extended family situation. I wish they could really spend time with my guys here because everybody would get along so well. It's like it's a really beautiful situation.
Yeah.
I did that for financial reasons, but it's really just to spread the love for, you know, and I feel everybody cares. I don't have one bandmate who doesn't care and actually thoughtful in how they feel about what I bring to the table so we can have these opportunities. Yeah. Everybody's a really beautiful soul. I'm so lucky.
That's lucky, yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to employ or spend time with anybody who's not a beautiful, genuine human, although I didn't always make those decisions.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask about that, like substance abuse and personality conflicts. Have you, you know, don't have to name names or anything, but
it's Kingston. Everybody knows.
Yeah. <Just kidding. laughs> Have you dealt with that situation?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Have I struggled in that situation? Yes.
Yeah.
Not on the drug aspect, thank goodness, because that is heartbreaking to watch. But alcohol, I think I was drunk for most of my 30s.
Yeah.
Unapologetically, I had a great time. But it's not a great way to run a business, and it's not a great way long term. Like, we no longer require a 26 or a Jägermeister for on a rider for every show.
No.
Why did I think that was like a normal thing? That's a crazy amount of alcohol. Not even everybody drinks Jägermeister in the band. And
just you?
It was a lot me. I would drink it in a glass.
Did Jeff Chown have anything to do with that?
Listen, you leave Jeff Chown right out of this. No. It's, you know, I was playing the Merchant Tap House 106 years ago, and my pal Dan Curtis turns to me and goes, "What are you drinking in that glass? Can I have a sip?" I said, "Yeah." And he takes a sip and he goes, "Oh, what is that?" And I said, "It's just a rye with a splash of Coke and a lime, like sugar in the coffee style." And he goes, yeah. I said, "Isn't that what you're drinking?" He goes, "No, this is Jägermeister." And I was like, "Jägermeister in a glass?"
Oh.
Dun, dun, dun. And next thing you know, Jägermeister in a glass forever and ever. Amen.
Okay. So it's Dan's fault.
Yeah. Well, come on. I mean, it's Drinkston's fault is what it is.
Interesting. I hadn't heard that one before.
We don't get to compare notes enough. This is great.
Right? All right. Many times in society, I think about this too a lot, that we don't understand artists, or society as a whole allows artists to be artists once they become, have widespread popularity or monetary success. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, now you can be an artist. But otherwise, it's like, what are you doing? You know? And the people can't really relate to like the musician who lives down the street, or the so-called blue-collared musician. Mm-hmm. And like for me, early in my career, I felt like the need to justify my existence in some way because I didn't fit in. And now I'm cool. But it took a long time to get there. Did you ever feel that way?
Yes.
Yeah.
Short answer, yes. I mean, I like to, I have a little saying that is, there's Beyonce and then there's the rest of us. Because like people don't, it's like they see that as success and they don't realize like there's a huge, there's a wealth of amazing full-time artists in this country and beyond who are really flying under the radar in many ways. But I still have people saying to me, "Oh, do you still sing?" And I'm like, dude, I was nominated for friggin' Juno this year. And it's my second. Like, what do you think I'm doing here? Do you think that just happens by chance? Like, it's like,
right.
It's hilarious to me. And it happens a lot, Tom. It happens a lot. People say, "Oh, are you still singing?"
Did anyone say you should go on The Voice?
Oh, stop it. If I had a nickel. I don't even need a dollar. America's got talent, Canada's got talent, whatever those things are.
Yeah, yeah.
No, thanks.
But they say that to me. It's like, have you heard me sing? I'm not the voice material here.
You're a great singer, and but I know what you're saying.
You know?
Yeah.
I have to admit, I have not watched The Voice.
I've never watched The Voice.
I trashed The Voice, but
Sadly, I've seen clips that people have sent me on. I shouldn't say sadly. I know people who have done well on it. Like, I personally know people who have done well on it. But I'm not sure. I think it really falls in the 15 minutes of fame category.
And it kind of speaks to that, like, what I was saying. It's like that the general public's understanding of what it means to be a musician.
Yes,
like,
you're right.
It's like, well, oh, you're doing great. You're on The Voice. Like, or you have this huge record deal, and that's it. Or get a real job.
So
there's not really much in between.
I hate to like squeeze some of the artistic elements out of this, but I'm curious what it is for you. But when we think about how we judge our, not necessarily just success, but like how we judge our growth and our careers, I think individually we each have different things. And like, I've had people say to me, "Ooh, I don't need an award. I'm not interested." I was like, "I will take the awards. Thank you very much. Get out of my way. I want award recognition. That helps me. That helps keep me motivated and moving forward. And money. And Seriously. How's my bank account doing? I just bought my kid a car, or most of a car. She had savings, and I feel great about it. You know?
Sure.
Hers died, and she's such a good kid. She asked me for nothing, really. Like, she's amazing. She works so hard. She had her savings, and she's like, can I get a loan, Mom? I've researched it, and this is going to cost so much money, and I wondered if you had it, I could just borrow from you and pay back each month. And I was like, you know what, bud? I'm going to give you the rest of the money to buy this car that she did all the research and all that stuff. And I said, and just make sure Mommy doesn't end up in a shitty nursing home, a crappy nursing home.
There you go.
Later in life. And let's just, if I didn't have some money in the bank, I cannot do that for her. And it's, in the grand scheme of life, it's not that big of a deal.
And so, awards have helped you in that regard?
Awards have helped me feel like I'm on a path of success for me.
But business-wise,
they
open up doors for you.
Every email that I send out, every, the cold call emails you send out to try and get some gigs, I start with 2-time Juno Award nominee.
Yeah, of course.
I do. Miss Emily, blah, 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 wants to play your venue.
But even not winning, like getting nominated, like just having that on your header.
True.
No,
it's true. And that doesn't ever go away, which is true. Having said that, I really wanted to win this year.
I thought...
And I have no problem saying
it. I thought you had a good shot. Well, I did. I texted you that. But I knew it was between you and...
Mariner.
Yeah, Steve Mariner.
He produced my last record, and he's one of my dearest friends in the whole wide world, and I love him so much. And we're such great pals, and I'm thrilled for him. He made a great record, and he's super talented and works his butt off. And there was some great stuff in that category, and everything's great. Actually, I'm pals with literally everybody in that category.
That's probably, those are the better categories for me. Like blues or folk or jazz. I'm not much into mainstream kind of pop music.
Yeah,
so
that, Tate McRae doesn't need another Juno. Congrats, Tate McRae, on your Junos. But she doesn't care. She doesn't go to the Junos.
Yeah.
But for the indie artists of the world,
it's important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It helps us, get the work so we can help buy our kids cars when theirs breaks down and they need to get their jobs school. And I don't know. That money part of it, I've learned, not to be like, oh, I don't care about the money. I do, because it helps me legitimize. I've spent my whole career trying to legitimize my career.
It's sort of
myself.
What I was talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. You're exactly what you were talking about. Because do you struggle with it, or do you know that you're legitimate?
I used to struggle with it. But I'm old now, and I just feel like I'm just more chill, even more chill than I was before, which is hard for some people to believe. But, I did have real problems. Like, you talk about recognition, and it comes down to validation.
It is.
And it's like this thing, which is weird about being an artist, is a performance artist, really, is, or performing artist, like you're laying it all out there in your recorded music too, but just like on stage, you're laying it out there, you're pouring out your soul. And so when the financial aspect of it doesn't work out, it's tied up with validation and
very
recognition.
Much. Yep.
And I've gone past that to a point. It's like, this is who I am. I am an artist, and this is just part of what I do, to create. And I think I need to impress myself internally and express what I need to express. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoy playing in front of an audience. Obviously, I enjoy that energy and that back and forth. For me, like at this stage, it's really about community and all the people that you meet, mm-hmm. and conversations you have, you affect these people's lives, and they affect yours. It's just like, this is a great place to be. This is just like a great, great job to have.
It really is.
It's like my partner, Kristen, says to me, she's like, you get to go to work and you have that instant feedback about how you did at work. And,
you know,
a lot of jobs, you just, you're there and you're like, oh, I don't know. Am I doing okay?
Yeah.
So
I've heard it must suck. I know, we get applause. It seems, even if it's from 14 people, you know, it's still like, it's a validation. It's an obvious validation. You're so right.
But yeah, but on the other side, it's like, I'm not like addicted to that so much. Maybe I was.
I don't know.
You're addicted to that?
Totally addicted. I am in all parts of my life, though. I don't know. Like, I blame it on growing up as a young woman in the 80s and 90s, when it was like you weren't allowed to think you were pretty or smart or talented. If you did, you were full of yourself. You're so full. She's so full of herself. She's full of her. Oh, she's vain. Vain, vain, vain. We were pushing this modesty thing on young women like myself and pretty much most generations before me, I would say.
Yeah.
And that was, and then what we ended up with was a bunch of women settling in crappy relationships and crappy jobs with crappiest self-esteem, and the trickle-down effect where we don't think we deserve, you know, enough. And that is like, now it was a crazy epidemic, and now it's changing. I make a point of having lots of girlfriends who are in their 20s. I'm 45 now, but I have girlfriends. I shouldn't say lots, but I have a few who want to hang out with a 45-year-old who are so rad. They're so confident. They don't put up with anything. Yeah. They see themselves as equal to any other human being, no matter how that person was raised, what they believe, how they identify, you know, as in a gender situation or sexually or anything. They are totally, they feel that they are deserving of the great stuff of life, most of them. And actually, I would say all of them that I know. It's just, it's a night and day difference from how I was raised.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely, things have changed a lot.
Yeah. And I think that's my issue too, is like, well, I hope I'm not like this forever. I've gotten better. Like today, people can't see what I'm wearing, but I'm wearing a big baggy outfit and no makeup, and I feel great about it. And I would never have come in for, like, you know, CFRC to do some radio stuff and not been in my like full professional getup. Guess what? This is my new semi-professional getup. It's,
you
like
look good.
Well, thanks. I'm comfortable, and like, I don't know, 45, like my feet hurt a bit now, you know, and like, I'm sick of trying to be the same size I was in high school. I've been the same size I was in high school. Who at 45 is the same size they were in high school? Like, a lot of us, actually, a lot of women are, because we are hungry and we're exhausted and we work out all the time. And I'm like,
I'm glad I'm not the same size I was in high school. I think I was like 120 pounds.
And
that would be problematic.
That'd be problematic. It'd be weird. It'd be weird. I think maybe I'm growing into what you're talking about, Tom, because that would be great. Maturing. I think it's called maturing.
I think so.
I'm on my way, but I'm not quite there yet. In the meantime, I require a lot of attention and a lot of validation. And everybody in my life would agree with that statement. So,
take all you can get.
So, I guess so.
But yeah, I was like, there was a period like I was in my 30s around there, and I was like, you know, just doing, well, I played a lot of shows, and so like, maybe it was burnout or whatever it was, but I like leaned into the artistic side. It was like, just do a completely different project from what I was doing, just to refresh. And that was sort of that, I would say, was the beginning of like finding my way away from that validation, you know. But everyone's different, obviously, but like, it's still there. So like, you know, like I said in the intro, it's like, you put out a record and what, the shelf life is 6 weeks. It's like, come on.
Yeah.
It's like, you, how many years did you put into making that record?
Don't make me cry.
From the start of writing it.
Yeah.
You know. Oh yeah, I wanted to ask you about like how, when you first realized you wanted to be a musician, like what was it like at a very young age? or
I don't remember not wanting to be a musician. So I'm guessing around age 3. I am one of those kids. You look at all the photos of me as a little kid, and I'm like in a stage outfit, and I'm pretending to put on a show. Like that's me from like toddlers.
Oh wow.
Oh yeah, and I was singing. My mom says that I did my first performance age 4 at the church, like solo. Bah. I sang a song from the back of a coloring book. Yeah, so it's like. I was born with the disease. It was like not. And then, of course, I just continued to be inspired by it. That's the other thing I find kind of interesting because I get asked sometimes, like, what your inspiration? I'm like, you guys wouldn't know who my inspirations are necessarily. A lot of them are like a local Prince Edward County population. I grew up in South End, Prince Edward County, eighth mm-hmm. generation from, farm fields. So it was anybody making music down there. And I watched them do that. My best friend's mom was a big one. She actually toured and had some pretty big successesses. But she
like Suzanne
Pasternak, yeah. So, but I really like. I was inspired by everything around me down there and that upbringing and the music that I heard. But I was definitely born with something that was like, this is what you're supposed to do in your life, and nobody was going to tell me any different.
Yeah, and you got into playing piano and young age kind of thing.
That we had a piano teacher. Oh man, I'm so lucky. Heather Ross was my piano teacher in Milford, and she was so positive. And of course, I'm a good little student and I'm a good little rule follower, or I used to be. It's come, but. And I loved piano lessons with her. Like I hear about all these people dropping out of piano because they didn't, they didn't like their piano teacher or they weren't learning what they wanted to learn. I did conservatory, like grade 8 conservatory all the way up to that. And she also did theory lessons with me and stuff. So this is, tough, kind of sometimes dry stuff. And she always made it interesting. And she also encouraged me to do other things that I enjoyed. So she didn't snuff that out, which I hear a lot of teachers can do that sometimes. And if a kid isn't learning what they want to learn, at least some of what they want to learn on top of what they need to learn, that's why we have kids dropping out of music classes. Like, what does a kid want to be there for,
My mom was a piano teacher, but she would always get the kid to choose.
Yeah.
You have your basics.
Yep.
I'm talking like beginning stages where you build that up and then you get to, you want to play Frozen or whatever it was at that time. So she ended up with quite the varied sheet music collection.
No doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah, I taught singing for years and I loved it. I would still do it if I had time because I love teaching it. Like my students inspire me. I really love that. But it was the same thing. I was like, what can we infuse here into this system of education of music that will create lifelong lovers and perhaps
that's
musicians
like carry you forward.
Yeah,
I was like, oh, I can do that. Oh, how about this?
I have a ton. My student list reads like the dream student list of Kingston.
Yeah.
Do you want to hear it?
Yeah, sure, if you like.
It's super great. Okay. Savannah Shea.
Oh, yeah.
Abby Stewart. Brielle LeBlanc. Julia Finnegan. Kira. Who else have? Cameron Wyatt from Cassador.
Okay.
Will, who was also in Cassador, the original lead singer.
That's like everybody.
It's like, it's crazy. I've had the major privilege and honor to work with Lydia. What's Lydia's last name? Lydia has, she just finished her master's or something. There's like these incredible artists and like, I feel like I got to be like a little piece of the,
Yeah.
Just a little something in there. They were all going to do whatever they were going to do anyways, but to feel like you got to,
push them along.
Yeah. And I really feel like I was inspired by their talent and potential and excitement for music. Like that all fed back to me too.
Mm-hmm.
God, I'm missing so many. I'm missing some. It's crazy. The list is crazy. Sadie McFadden.
this will be on the internet so you can write a comment with all your...
With everybody else.
Everyone you think about later. It's like, sorry I didn't mention you on the show.
Yeah, it was great. I actually did a show with Savannah Women's Day, International Women's Day in Kingston thing last year, and she led everybody in the group who was featured in the showcase in a warm-up. And she did some of these warm-ups, and she looked at me and she goes, I learned this from you. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. Because I learned it from my teacher. Some of the stuff might have been something I developed, but it's always inspired from somebody else. And I'm like, oh, we're all connected. It's just so cool that way.
Yeah, right on.
Yeah. You know, do you ever find, because it can be, I guess you work within the institution of a band, you work within a band situation, but you also do solo stuff.
Yeah.
Do you find the band situation helps keep you from feeling lonely? Like when you're more...
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Like we have a lot of fun. We're pretty boring, but we have a lot of fun. Fun being boring.
You mean don't have drug problems? That's all you just said.
No drug problem. We like to play dice in the hotel room.
Oh, that's adorable.
Yeah,
that's adorable.
You have to ask Jeff Chown about Valdez sometime, and he'll tell you.
Jeff Chown's one of my best friends in the whole wide world.
Yeah, so we've played a lot of that game, and so sometimes I've said, it's like, we go on tour just so we can play dice rather than the actual game, the show.
So good.
But we stay up all night pretty much.
Wow, and that's rock and roll.
Yeah, that's rock and roll.
I'm like, it's a race to the bed.
That's, no.
You know, sometimes Bunny will be like, let's have a pop a lot, want to have a whiskey, and maybe Bunny will have, and then next thing you know, everybody's up and I'll have like half a whiskey and then I'll go to bed. I'm always the first one in bed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like at home, I'm probably go to bed between 11 and 12.
Not how consistent.
I'm consistent.
Good.
It's good for sleep.
That's great.
Which is proper sleep's good for your mental health too. So a little,
it's like you just
fits in
that
with this show. So, but yeah, we do have a lot of fun, and it was interesting because I, like I said before, I did all that touring, all that solo touring, which was also interesting for me because I had never really been alone in my life. I've been in a relationship or had kids. Mm-hmm. So doing all that driving by myself, it's a lot of time to think.
Yeah.
And maybe too much time to think at certain points, but you know, it's almost like this big month-long meditation.
Yeah.
Of, you know, 5 hours a day.
Yeah. It is like a month-long. No, I think that's a great way to balance things. Because if I do a long drive like that, and then I go play a show, and it's from the minute I get out of my car, I have to be on, right?
Right.
You know this. We have to be on. The show starts as soon as you arrive at the venue.
Mm-hmm.
Not when the show starts, but when you arrive at
that's
a venue,
a good point.
Like, and I don't know, if, especially because I'm a woman. People look at me, and they expect me to look good, and they expect me to be friendly and kind and sincere. That you know, otherwise I get labeled pretty quickly. So, like, and I am. Generally, that's my resting posture. Is fairly nice person, but
yeah.
But like the show starts then, and then it's nonstop for you know potentially 8 or 9 hours, not 3 hours, and
till you're off.
Yeah. And then when I'm driving again, then I am like, I don't have to impress anybody. I don't have to meet anybody's expectations. I have to get from point A to point B. Often I will turn on an audiobook or listen to one of my favorite albums. I wish I could say I listen to new music. I really don't. I listen to Paul Simon's Graceland a lot.
Yeah. Well, it's a good album.
Casey Musgraves' Deeper Well a lot. I have like my favorites. But anyways, it's meditative time. I like that. And that's got to be good for us, right?
Yeah, I think
so. It's got to be good for balancing of mental health and, you know.
But I was going to say, like, it's interesting, though, after not doing that for a long time and then doing all the band stuff, I booked almost like a year ago, I booked just a little run, solo run.
Yep.
And it was so, so quiet. Like, I wasn't used to it. And like, where's my buds to roll the dice with?
I ended up in a really beautiful new venue in March on tour by myself, and they put me up in this beautiful 3-bedroom, recently gorgeously renovated 100-year-old farmhouse. And I walk in, there's a beautiful clawfoot tub, huge kitchen, you know, a fireplace, indoor and outdoor. It was like so stunning. And I like ran around the house and I was so excited. And then I was so lonely. I was so nobody to enjoy it with, you know. Yeah. And then I got home and it was dark and I just crawled into bed and probably cried myself to sleep, if I was being honest. That sounds so sad, but
it does
happen. And that's what I did. It was like, what's the point of any of this if you don't have someone to share it with? And although I love my alone time, there's moments when I'm like, I really just want to share it with somebody.
Well, yeah, and that juxtaposition between the show where like, oh, yeah, great show. Yeah. I was like, oh, can you sign my thing? And then it's just, it goes quiet.
Yep. Yeah. My bar days were like that.
Yeah.
My bar day early
super
on.
Super party time.
Yeah, everybody, you know, and then all my bandmates would go home with their girlfriends or some hottie from the bar or whatever, and I'd go home by myself, watch some Red Shoe Diaries, fall asleep on the couch by myself, a little drunk. And that was it. And I was like, wow, we just hosted this great party. Nice lineup, 250 people in the bar. Everyone's like, yeah, calling your name. And the next thing you know, you're by yourself, crying yourself to sleep.
Wow.
It's just like,
get out the guitar.
I know.
It's like country album time.
Get out the book writing stuff. Write a book.
All right. Well, I think it's time. We got to wrap her up. So it's promo time.
What?
So.
I hate,
you know,
Emily reaches for her posters of two different sizes sitting slightly to her right. Promo time, in you want to know what I'm up to?
Exactly. And whatever you want to say.
Well, I am really excited right now that I am in a musical. So once upon a time, I used to do some professional musical theater stuff. It was a long time ago, and it has been... it's not something I necessarily thought I'd revisit. And a little over a year ago, I had this really cool opportunity, this really cool phone call. And so I am starring in one of the featured performers in a show called In the Key of Blue, which was written by Mike Trites from Prince Edward County.
Okay.
And it's a Canadian musical featuring the music of Blue Rodeo.
Right on.
Yeah. So, unlike the Tragically Hip musical, which hilariously is also happening this year, it's that's a Mervish production with like a crazy big budget and the whole. This is essentially community theater. It is
in the county.
We have one for opening weekend is in Picton at the Regent Theater, and it's almost sold out those three shows, which is crazy. That's I think they're at 1,300 tickets or something. They've sold so far. Kingston, I'm not even sure Kingston has even barely started selling it. But
like
hopefully,
July 10th?
July 10th, 11th, 12th in Kingston at the Isabel. So, yeah.
That's really cool.
So I hope people come to the show. And I'm excited. Oh, I realize on this poster it says featuring the county's own, which I guess this is what they call me in the county, and then Kingston says Kingston's own.
Yeah, you just got to switch that out.
At 45, I've actually spent equal time in both.
Yeah.
Yeah, and maybe 8 months in the middle where I slept in my car. No fixed address. But yeah, so that's what I got going on. And then, you know, shows. Line Spike and Harrowsmith, which will be fun with the full band. I'm opening for Chantal Kravyatsik and Rain Maida, which I did open for Chantal Kravyatsik, I want to say in 2003, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah, in Belva. So pretty excited to see her live again.
Yeah.
And
any new record coming out?
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, it's been 6 weeks at least.
Yeah. It's so funny you say that. Yeah. So, no, I am thinking about it. I actually just I talked to my pal last week. I will keep him nameless for now, but I think I'm going to do a duo record with a longtime friend of mine who's had some mega awesome success in his career. We've been pals since high school. And I was like, do you want to make an acoustic record together? And he said, yeah, man. So we have a phone call tonight to start that.
Okay. Yeah. Intrigue.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So let's see where that goes. And then, of course, I'll do another studio album. But that's I got to do some writing. I just moved, so I've been painting and moving and unpacking boxes, and but re-inspired, and I shall be doing some writing.
Right. Yeah. You're not like, you don't put yourself on a schedule
for writing?
Yeah, you just, no. Yeah, just wait.
No, I feel like I quote, I'm getting sick and then I barf out a record. It's the best way to describe it.
That's kind of, yeah, I get that.
Do you schedule?
I wouldn't say barf out a record, but I feel like I write a lot. So, but every time, well, a lot of the time that it'll come up is sort of like a melancholy feeling.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, I just don't feel right. And then sure enough, a few days later, pick up the guitar and there it is. Okay. That's why I was feeling all weird.
Have you read the Rick Rubin book?
I have not.
I would really encourage it, about creativity. Very cool. Cool. Very cool.
Right on.
Awesome.
Recommendations.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Tom. That was so fun.
Yeah. Good to have you here.
Yay.
Thanks again to our special guests and our listeners for joining me on Leave It All on the Stage today. Be sure to stay tuned to CFRC 101.9 FM for our next show and subscribe to the podcast on your favorite streaming platforms, YouTube, or on my website, tomsavage.ca, where you can also sign up for the Leave It All on the Stage newsletter and get the latest news on my music projects, access exclusive music, and read more about my thoughts on the life of a professional musician. Want to join me in a conversation? Reach out through the website. In the meantime, support your local artists and have a great day.
Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present Abby Miolet's new single, Absolutely, 5 minutes of folky acoustic guitar and R&B-inspired vocals that peel through the complex layers of love, capturing both the fear and gratitude that come with sharing your life with someone. Keep up with the artist by following Voice of Abby on Instagram, and if you'd like to be highlighted next time, complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visitkingston.music on Instagram. For now, let's enjoy Absolutely by Abby Miolet right now, here on CFRC 101.9 FM.
If you only knew what we were in for, would you still believe we were meant to meet by chance that day in May? If I only knew what we were in for, would I go to you the way I did, or go back the way I came? If we only met when we were older and wiser and more mature, would it make a difference? Darling, we'll never know.
Never, never know.
But I can say with full conviction that you're the greatest gift I've been given, with all your ups and downs. And I know love works in mysterious ways, and its beauty can get lost in the chaos of fighting and fearing the worst. But if you were to ask me if I'd still go to you, I'd say absolutely. I'd say didn't care what anyone else else thinks about me and you. Maybe I'd feel as calm as you do if we only gave some time for the escalation to decline. Would we be just fine? I've been given with all your ups and downs. And I know love works in mysterious ways, and its beauty can get lost in the chaos of fighting and fearing the worst. But if you were to ask me if I'd still go to you, I'd say absolutely, I'd say absolutely, I'd say absolutely, absolutely. Baby, I know it's been cold out, but we're still warm, and I know now the fire we have will keep us alive. Let your guard down, no more guns out, put your weapons away, we're a team now. My battles are yours and yours are mine. It's been a year, you know me so well, maybe better than I know myself. I wanna learn love with you till we die. I can say with full conviction that you're the greatest gift I've been given.
Are you listening from inside a local prison, or do you have a friend or loved one in a local prison or youth detention center? Calls from Home is a monthly radio program for you. On Calls from Home, we share voicemails, messages, song requests, and dedications. Anyone can contact us with a message or song request for a friend or loved one on the inside. To get in touch, call or text 613-917-1390. Email cfrcprisonradio@riseup.net or send us a message on Instagram at cfrcprisonradio. The CFRC radio signal reaches the following local and regional prisons.